Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time listening to the Guelph Politicast, welcome. Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference, or are just making life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today I talk to the Friends of the Guelph Public Library. They're the group that puts on the annual massive used book sale to support the eventual construction of a new main library downtown. I was able to get three of the volunteer organizers to take a break from sorting and preparing the thousands of items that will make up this year's sale to talk about all the wonderful things the money raised from the sale will make happen one day. The Guelph Library and Friends are the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast, but first, my usual public service announcement. Guelph Politico is crowdfunded through Patreon, where you can contribute on a per-monthly basis of any amount you feel comfortable using PayPal or your credit card, and all that money goes to maintaining a locally sourced independent media outlet in Guelph called Guelph Politico. Through your generous donations, you'll be paying to keep the Politicast going, as well as regular coverage of City Council and politics in and around and concerning the Royal City. For more details, click on the giant orange P on the right-hand side of the Guelph Politico page, or go to patreon.com/GuelphPolitico. And now on with the show. This past week at the Committee of the Whole, Steve Croft, CEO of the Guelph Library, delivered a report that seemed to indicate that in terms of services and outreach to the community, the library is doing okay. Half the people that live in Guelph have a library card, over 2 million items were borrowed last year, and over 38,000 people participated in various library programs. With numbers like that, you'd figure it'd be easy to convince the powers that be to build a new main library. But, you know. Politics aside, though, that's the end goal of the Friends of the Guelph Public Library. Since 2007, they've been fundraising for that goal, collecting so far $430,000 with an ever-expanding and increasingly successful annual used book sale. Last year alone, over 7,500 people spent almost $120,000 on a wide variety of previously enjoyed books, CDs, DVDs, records, and toys. In 9 years, 200 volunteers have helped sell 107,356 items, with all that revenue after expenses going to support Guelph's libraries. So this week I talked to Virginia Gillum, Carol Stewart, and Carol Herman, who have all been involved in the book sale in various capacities over the years. Right now, the sale is 2 weeks away from liftoff, so they are busy sorting and organizing the thousands of items in a most meticulous way. And they outline all that this week on the podcast, plus we talk about why people love the book sale and the politics that have surrounded building the new library all this past decade. I caught up with members of the Friends of the Guelph Public Library earlier this week in studio.
I'm Virginia Gillum. I'm the chair of the Friends of the Guelph Public Library, and I'm also chair of the annual book sale, which is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year, and I've been involved every year.
I'm Carol Herman. I'm helping out with signs and sale day. I've been involved for 3 years. It's been delightful.
I'm the other Carol, Carol Stewart, and I'm nominally with Carol in charge of the sale day, which means I'm in charge of everything you see at the sale except for the books, which I'm the one person in the sale startup who never actually touches a book.
That might interest some people. You are in charge of the whole sale except for the actual point of the sale.
Well, there are the sorting crew.
The sorting crew.
Which, very key. You know, has a massive job.
Mm-hmm.
Because we get in thousands and tens of thousands of books and they have to be sorted through. And I get the tables there. They put them on the tables.
When I was thinking about this interview yesterday, I was considering that aspect of it, that this is a sale of books, but you get all these donations, thousands of books donated, presumably from people who love books and have, you know, perhaps are trying to make room in their lives for more books, and now and you resell them to people who, you know, some of whom perhaps did clear out that space by donating books and now bringing in more books. It's books for books. It seems like a very fascinating I don't know, there's something philosophical there, I almost think.
Well, and in fact, we are aware that in many cases they just kind of rent them because the books are very inexpensive. They're $1, $2, and $3, $3 for gorgeous big hardbacks. So people go out with two shopping bags full of books to do them for their year's reading, and then the next year they donate them back and start all over again. And it's, I've seen people with, you know, two big bags, and they've spent $25, which is less than it costs for one book normally.
I think two bags full of books is what's called light reading at this sale. It's just from my own experience. People love this event. This is a major, major event. It's almost like a literary event on par with like the Eden Mills Writers Festival in terms of how many people come out. Maybe not that big. But the lineup starts early. This is like Boxing Day for local book lovers, isn't it?
You want to talk to that?
I have kidded Virginia that even if we succeed in getting this main library built, that the sale now has its own life and she will have to continue until she's 95.
It's a life sentence as far as I can tell. If you've been there on the Friday afternoon, what we started to do a number of years ago was allow people to pay for early admission. So normally admission is free starting Friday evening at 6 o'clock. But on Friday afternoon, you can pay to get in. And when we started to do that, we presumed that it would be the dealers, because we do get a lot of book dealers. And the dealers certainly do it. But amazingly, people from the community come as well. So as you say, you can drive by 3 hours ahead, and there's this huge lineup of people waiting to get in for the early bird sale.
The most fun moment of the sale probably is when we actually open the doors on Friday and it's scattered.
Leap out of the way for fear of being trampled.
Let's rewind a bit and talk about how it got started. It's, you know, it is 10 years. 10 is an important anniversary. It's strange, though, to think that, you know, 10 years ago, this was like started with the intention of, you know, working towards a new main branch of the library. And I think that goal seemed a lot closer in 2006 than even now, 10 years later, in terms of the original intent of the sale. So in looking back at the history, could you just talk a little about, you know?
We hope we're closer than we were 10 years ago. Yes. Well, as I mentioned when I introduced myself, I'm the chair of the Friends of the Library Executive, and that is made up of about 8 or 10 people. And one of them in particular, Marge Bethune, who, like several of us, is a librarian, kept saying, we should do a book sale. We should do a book sale. And finally I said in my delegating mode, fine, Marge, go for it. And the poor thing, she did the whole thing single-handedly the first year. So the template on which it has evolved was Marge's. I should tell you that she's not been that involved since. She learned her lesson early. But in any event, the first year it was one day. We started to panic when the donations reached 20,000 books. And we took in a little over 10 and cleared a little under $9,000. Thought we'd died and gone to heaven. Last year,
You panicked because the donations were so many.
So many, we didn't think we'd handle them. Last year, having sorted scrupulously the really good books and CDs and whatever that got out there, numbered over 100,000. And we took in, it now goes for 3 days, as you're aware, and we took in $119,000 and cleared 110. So tenfold in 9 years. It's just staggering. Mm-hmm. And as you say, it's become an iconic community event.
In terms of the goal, which is to raise money to eventually go to a main branch of a new main branch of the public library. In terms of that goal, why is that so important? Because we do have, and I don't mean that to be like prove to me why it's important kind of way. There is a conversation going on right now actually at the library about why libraries matter, and there's going to be a presentation that we're recording this on Monday before Committee on the Whole, where there Steve Kraft is going to have a presentation about why libraries matter. So in terms of getting a new brick-and-mortar library in the downtown core, why does that matter?
Well, before I answer that, I'm going to jump on you and ask you to please stop referring to it as the main branch.
Okay.
Because that's one of our biggest problems in causing the public to understand. It's not a branch. The branches are branches.
Okay.
The main library is the trunk, if you will, if you want to
use right.
the tree.
The main trunk.
And everything that makes the branches run and makes the whole system run happens in the main library. So if you walk into a branch and look around, you don't see any administrative space. The main library is the seat of the development and dissemination of the automated systems. It's the center of the ordering and processing of all the material. The specialized reference librarians are there. The special collections, like the business collection and the archives, are all in the main library. To attempt to replicate that in all the branches would be infinitely more expensive than the present system, which is economically very sensible.
Well, you make a good point, because I think when people who perhaps are against the spending of city money on building a new library, I think the vision is, and perhaps because they don't step foot in a library terribly often, is that what happens at the main trunk happens at the Westminster Woods branch and the West End Rec Center branch and the branch in the East End. So perhaps that is an important distinction to make.
And what I want to say to those people is, what do you think makes the branches run? It's the main library that makes the branches run.
If you're a branch of an insurance company, you surely assume that there's some central office for the insurance company.
Excellent analogy, and business friendly. How much money has this raised so far?
We have invested, as the potential gift for a new main library, $430,000.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we've probably raised closer to $5,000 because we do spend it on other things. We bought artwork for the library. We gave them a $10,000 donation this year to equip the new bookmobile. We made the founding $10,000 grant for the library endowment fund. So we do other things with it, but in turn we do bank most of it. It's invested in the Guelph Community Foundation, and that's $430,000.
Those other investments, though, does that come from a place of, you know, we're sitting on this nest egg and that's destined to help the library in some capacity, but you know, perhaps there's an element of we're kind of tired of waiting and we want to help out the library today in some way, so why not the bookmobile and why not other ways?
Well, there have been friends of the library groups all over North America for 100 years,
mm-hmm.
In support of the library. There never was one in Guelph until about 15 years ago, because apparently it wasn't needed. The library was always very supported without it. But most of them aren't putting 90% of their funds away for a new main library. They're doing that kind of thing all the time. So that's what friends of the library groups do. They also do smaller things like give book prizes for kids' reading groups and that sort of thing. But that is what a Friends of the Library group is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps you can each talk about why this is personally important to you in terms of trying to get this new main library going, in terms of proving, I assume that part of it is trying to make a point to the city that this is important to a large group of people, that we have a proper, not that the current main library isn't proper, but I know there are issues in terms of space, in terms of the need to address more resources, but you know, why get involved and why is this important to you?
I think the fact that the book sale is so popular and so successful speaks to the fact that people are still engaged with books. We sell, you know, as many nonfiction books as we sell books. So people who say, in fact, that all you need these days is a smartphone,
mm-hmm.
and you can just look up what you need to know, are missing the whole point of what knowledge is about in nonfiction. They're missing the whole point of the pleasure you get from reading a book as a book. And I mean, I read both electronic books and books. And books are much more satisfactory because you can shift back easily. I mean, you can do that on an electronic book, but boy, it's a real pain. libraries have been important to human civilization from a very early time. I mean, one of the wonders of the Western world was the bank at the library at Alexandria.
Mm-hmm. And just to before we move on to Carol, but you make an interesting point about the knowledge thing, because I think one of the things I've encountered in just going about my work on Politico is that sometimes the internet can't deliver all. I did a piece about Terry Fox's run when he ran it through Guelph in July 1980 during the Marathon of Hope. You can't find those Guelph Mercury articles online because the Guelph Mercury articles only go back to, you know, when they started posting online. So you have to go, you have to do what I did. You go to the library, look up the microfilm, and get the PDF copies printed off. It's, you know, I think perhaps because people are so perhaps superficial searches and the immediacy of the knowledge they need, like an address for a place or something like that, that we don't completely understand what knowledge isn't there on the internet yet in terms of what access to information.
Yes, and what's invidious about the internet is, in fact, that once you've read one article with a particular slant, they suggest you all sorts of articles which have the same slant.
Mm.
Whereas if you actually look at books, you can see that there are different points of view, and perhaps you ought to revise yours a bit. I wasn't actually a librarian. I was an academic, so I feel very strongly about mm-hmm. what's happening to the base of knowledge through the internet.
Well, perhaps Carol has differing opinions.
I'm sure she does.
Well, not about what Drew said. I was thinking, you know, when you go into a library for a book, and you notice around it a number of other books in that same area, and you think, oh, there's more to come back and get.
Right.
So that rounds out your knowledge. But initially, I was also thinking that as a young mother, I took my children often to the library. Our children's section of books sells very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
And young families often can't afford to buy those books. Mm. So the library is really critical. And as to why there's a new main needed, the conditions of storage are not up to what they need to be.
Right.
We need to get really weather-controlled and humidity-controlled, I should say.
There was a similar problem with the museum, the Guelph
yes.
Civic Museum. That was one of their needs to move, was the storage issue and exactly. having things properly climate controlled so that they can preserve things. And I used to volunteer at the museum, so I also know there was a space issue. So that's always an ongoing concern for libraries, too.
Yep.
Virginia.
I'm making notes, you can tell.
It's not against the rules.
No. One of the major misunderstandings, I feel like our mission is to correct misunderstandings. One of the major misunderstandings is that libraries are boxes full of books.
Mm-hmm.
And libraries are sources of information in all formats. And people who say to you, I've got a phone, I don't need the library, you know, it all falls out of heaven.
Right.
Can't begin to understand. What falls out of heaven onto your phone has almost no connection to the electronic resources you could get from either a public library or a university library. The libraries pay for those resources just the way they pay for the hardcover books.
Right.
And so there are all kinds of in-depth databases on any subject you can think of electronic information in addition to the books that are in the library,
mm-hmm.
which you couldn't get yourself unless you paid for them separately, which would be a ridiculous thing to do because they cost hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So I consider libraries to be sources of information in all formats. This downtown library was built more than 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When the city was less than half its present size. But beyond the size capacity issue, nobody who planned it had any idea where electronic information was going to go, or even I think that it was going to exist. So it's not at all set up to handle and disseminate the kind of electronics that need to be handled. It's a miracle of rat's nest of wiring, and you can't imagine what they have to do to accommodate it. Carol mentioned climate control. The archives are in that main building, and that is really scary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And what we need is a much larger, properly climate-controlled space. They've got city records. They've got the family histories of the big name families whose names are on all the streets. Mm-hmm. All of that kind of thing is in the archives, and we need to be looking after it better. So the whole sort of function of a main library needs to be handled much better mm-hmm. than that building can do. I think Steve and his staff do an amazing job with what they have to work with. They're terrific, and we're very fortunate to have them.
Keeping all that in mind, though, why has this process become so political, do you think? I mean, I hate to bring it up, but I am a political website. But every time this topic comes up, it seems that people go to one of the two camps, which is like, yes, let's make a new main library. Yeah. No, we can't afford it. We don't want to spend the tax dollars, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, these things seem to... The arguments you're talking about, particularly in terms of the archives and all this local history, that, you know, one bad weather day could be lost. And it seems to me nothing could be more practical than finding a way to preserve our local heritage and our local history, and that should be a nonpartisan issue.
Well, and the argument you get from the side who don't think we can or should do this is that we can't afford it, because mm-hmm. I think they're viewing it solely as an outlay of money, mm-hmm. whereas that's not at all the case. I mean, you can look at sort of any city, and Halifax and Ottawa are two who have done it recently, who have new, wonderful main libraries downtown. They bring huge numbers of people into the downtown core. And while they're there, obviously, when they come out the front door, they're going to visit the stores. I mean, we're trying to rejuvenate our downtown core, and we would have hundreds of thousands of visitors a year downtown doing that.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts from you, Carols, about the politics of this? I assume you watch these debates carefully, and it seems like, just, you know, from my own impartial observations, this sort of comes and it goes, and... it comes up, and there's some level of enthusiasm for it. I mean, I think this council is kind of viewed as antagonistic throughout these long-term heritage cultural projects, but when you watch city council, it seems that, you know, there is some interest for this, but it always hits a wall at some point. It's like, yes, let's do the library, and then we don't hear about it till, you know, the next year when one of the friends delegates for it at tax time, which, or at budget time, what it is known to happen.
I think you hit it with the taxes. I don't know what this, well, I do. It's been going on since Rome. But anyway, I don't want to spend my taxes for those guys. Mm. And we went through it with the River Run. Mm-hmm. And a core said, no, we have to have it, we have to have it, and hung in there. But it seems to be, it's easy to bring it back to the pocket,
right.
and then it gets shot down again. It's just very frustrating. The ones on this side of it, of course, think, give your heads a shake.
Anyway. Well, the other thing is that the plan for some time has been that the new main library would be the anchor for the Baker Street redevelopment.
That's right.
And my understanding of the original concept was that there's going to be all kinds of commercial development in that space, and the commercial development would in fact subsidize the cost of building the library.
Right.
The library would bring the people in. So in addition to bringing people into the downtown core, which is an economic benefit, the whole concept of the surrounding commercial development subsidizing it is another one. So it's not just an outlay of the huge figure that people like to throw out as being scary.
I wonder if perhaps in the effort to expedite it, if all that sort of got untied, it almost seems like the waiting for the commercial development side of it. And perhaps there is an argument for waiting on that, but it almost seems like that is anchoring down the ambition and the interests and the desire in a new main branch as well.
Well, I don't know what the city plans to do in terms of the promised infrastructure money from the federal government, but I'm presuming that Baker Street is what they're going to put forward. That would mm-hmm. certainly make sense. And I guess I'm really hoping that the library will be part of that. It seems to me that what was described by the Prime Minister has public library written all over it.
Mm.
So that's what I would like to see happen.
Well, I would like to turn this back from the politics end to the actual, because the book sale, that is what's coming up. In terms of, you know, the challenges, the ongoing challenges and holes, you know, it's gotten way bigger than it was originally intended. We revisited that background. But I think the one thing that sort of comes up every year is the space concerns. Every year that's sort of in the news that you guys need a big enough space, and it's a rare kind of problem because you need a huge space to have a huge book sale, and it's 3 days long, 3 days out of the year, and it's kind of hard to get a permanent location just for the 3 days. So in terms of the maybe other challenges, are people maybe running out of books? I don't know.
No, they're not running out of books. I'll just tell you that we need it for a lot more than 3 days. It takes, we actually have our space for 3 months.
Okay.
And the sorting has been going, the donation's been coming in since the beginning of August, and the sorting has been going on since the 1st of September.
Wow.
And the reason we attract people from all over, including dealers as far away as from the United States, is because we're known for sorting scrupulously and having things very well organized. So that's what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually need the space for 3 months, and we don't want to pay for it, because if we paid for it, there'd be no point in having the sale. So that's as you said, I'm whined to the press every year for 6 months, and finally someone says, oh, give that woman a building and keep her quiet.
On the flip side of it is that it speaks well of Guelph that you are able to find an appropriate location every year, and that as much as we hear about how busy it is locally in terms of commercial development, there is still some space somewhere that this can be held, and somebody does volunteer that space and makes it readily available for you guys for a couple of months.
Well, there are about 5 families in Guelph who own quite a lot of the commercial real estate.
That's very true.
And bless their hearts, every one of them has helped us. We're up to the 5th one now, so I'm hoping another one appears the next time we need it, because we're wearing out our welcome.
Is there anything new about the sale this year in terms of, you know, the layout, the organization? Is there going to be, like, any surprises for the regulars coming back?
The space is strange this year in that it's very long and narrow.
Excellent.
So the view as you come in the front door is just sort of books so far away that, you know, the people at the far end look about this tall. So the layout has to be slightly different this year in order to accommodate that space. I think that's the only major surprise we have on offer this year. Oh, Carol says we have another one.
It's going to be the second year that Joe Coffee will be providing the refreshments, and we'll have a nice sit-down area. So Joe Coffee is active in the library itself as well. Mm-hmm. And that's quite lovely for the volunteers not to have to marshal that, I must say.
That's
right. They keep whatever money comes to them.
Mm-hmm.
They give nothing to us, and we give nothing to them except the space.
Except a lot of thanks.
And a lot of thanks, yes.
So in terms of size, we don't have an actual count at the moment, but the sorters tell me that it looks like we've got at least as many books as we had last year, and so we're headed for another more than 100,000 items on offer. And as I said previously, those are scrupulously sorted. So we have several criteria, one of which is, would you take it to bed with you?
Mm.
And then if you walk around while they're sorting, you'll see them applying the sniff test. So those don't make it to the sale. Only the good ones make it to the sale. And even so, I think we're going to be over 100,000 again, as we were last year.
Record-breaking year?
I hope so. I try not to say that out loud. Last year I had my sights on 100,000, and I never said it out loud until after the fact. So now see what you've done. I hope you haven't, jinxed me.
No, this will get the Politico bump, but it'll be fine.
Okay.
maybe that's a thing. We'll find out. In terms of, you know, you mentioned about doing this forever, and it was kind of a joke. But, I mean, I do wonder at this point, is there an end game to this? I mean, suppose, like, in another 5 years, there's a library downtown, a new building, and we can hang up the Mission Accomplished banner. But I think people will really miss this. This has become too big an event. And I wonder if that's occurred to any of you that, you know, even after the library has this new fabulous home that you're envisioning, if you can let this go, if the people will let you let this go, and perhaps this is going to be a way to support the library on an ongoing basis.
Our bodies will let it go. We are all getting older. We need young blood, strong muscles. The book boxes, they must weigh 25 to 50 pounds, a box that comes in. And we are getting less and less able to lift those. We take them individually, but 100,000 individually is a...
When we first started having the sales, I think what we thought, not having any idea they'd get this large, was that once there was a new building, there would be a space, a gift shop or what have you, and this could be a smaller ongoing phenomenon. But, I mean, when I'm doing this whining around the town looking for space, people say to me, well, why don't you have three small ones instead of one big one? But by now, as I've mentioned several times, our clientele include these big dealers who come from as far away as Michigan, and they're not going to come for three small ones right. or once a week. They want to come for the one big one. So the short answer to what you said is I have no idea, and it's really scary when I contemplate it. I think the community would miss it. I think you're quite right.
Over under 5 years before there's a new library. Does anyone want to take that action?
Oh, I think it would be over before there is one, even if they agree tomorrow to do it, because it's a... face. Then
right.
if it's in Baker Street, the first thing they have to do is build the Wilson Street parkade before they can decommission the parking in Baker Street. So,
well, that is coming this fall, but how about shovels in the ground over under 5 years?
don't make me answer that. Don't make me answer that. If they would just say yes tomorrow it's going to happen, I think I'd be happy.
Fair enough. Well, before we wrap up, perhaps you can take a minute and promote the sale in terms of maybe you need some volunteer help. You need that young blood that Carol inferred to, volunteers, and just when the sale takes place and the where and the times.
The sale is the weekend before Halloween. And my biggest concern is that a lot of people don't know where the location is.
Mm-hmm.
It's 69 Huron Street, which is one end of a humongous warehouse that belongs to W.C. Woods. So the warehouse actually stretches two full blocks, and the other end of it is 64 Duke Street, which more people have heard of, but we're on the other street. Adjacent to Sacred Heart School and about a block from the Italian-Canadian Club. So if you put 69 Huron into your GPS, it'll find it, but it is sort of buried there. And if you don't know the ward, people don't know where it is. I've had that conversation with a number of my friends.
It's on the west end of Ferguson, right? It's Huron's on the west end of
yes,
Ferguson.
Yes, I think that's
yes.
right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Get out of from Elizabeth Street.
Yeah. There you go.
The way I have said too that when you turn onto Elizabeth Street from downtown, it's the first light.
Ah.
Okay. Turn right on that.
Well,
street.
Yes.
And it's at the bottom of what they refer to as the 100 stairs. Those stairs that come down from the Metcalf Street area.
That's right.
That's where you turn. In any event. It's going to be wonderful, assuming people find us, because it's going to be every bit as big as it's been in the past. We have almost all the books are $1, $2, or $3. It's just the best bargain in town. We also, however, have a section of special books, and we have one of our volunteers is extremely knowledgeable about that kind of thing. So if anything is old or looks special for whatever reason, we hand it to her. After somebody found buried in the $3 books one time, a book that had been autographed by both Johnny Cash and June Carter.
Wow.
We now have our volunteers all teed up, and they're supposed to check for autographs. So with luck, all the autographed ones are in the special section as well, and those are priced individually. But almost everything is $1, $2, and $3. And the wonderful anonymous donor has now, for I think at least the third year, given us $1,000 so that we can give one free book to every child who comes.
Wow. That's awesome.
And speaking of Johnny Cash, we have a very large music section of CDs and sheet music, and there are DVDs still, and we're still going to have VHS. Is this the last year?
Well, we haven't made that decision, but there certainly are still tapes this year.
People still can play those, and they come and take bags and bags full of those out.
Oh, no, people will still buy the VHS.
Oh, yeah.
That it's there is a collector's market for it, so don't.
Oh,
and vinyl recordings as well, and
yes,
definitely.
Yes.
My son is a vinyl recording collector. That's something that's coming back again, so we have those as well.
Great.
I don't think I have anything to add to that.
Well, Virginia, Carol, and Carol, thank you so much for joining me today, and best of luck with the sale and putting that money away for the library. I hope it's sooner rather than later, and I think a lot of people do too. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And once again, that was Virginia Gillum, Carol Stewart, and Carol Herman, three of the friends of the Guelph Public Library. The used book sale takes place on October 21st, 22nd, and 23rd at 69 Huron Street. For more details about the book sale, go to its website at friendsguelphlibrary.ca. And that's all for this week on the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host of the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can also get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. You can reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can also go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And, of course, you can donate to Guelph Politico on Patreon at patreon.com/GuelphPolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. And you may have noticed that this month I am running the Adam Vent calendar, which is an effort to do a kind of funding drive for Guelph Politico. So if you have contributed to the Patreon, or you would like to encourage others to contribute to Patreon, please share the Adam Vent posts, and thank you to all those who have helped out through either donating or promoting the cause. I appreciate all the donations that have been offered so far. For all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly, and until then, see you next time.